The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
A very big day for AutoNation, the largest U.S. retailer of new cars and trucks. Not only did AutoNation report record profits, they are taking their franchise into a whole new world. The plans now are to rename the mass market brand franchises in the first half of this year under one umbrella. AutoNation will become the biggest dealership network to operate under one brand in an industry that pioneered the U.S. franchise system, beginning with General Motor Company's predecessor more than a century ago. You've heard Mike many times on the show. He's in studio with us today because he is trumpeting this very closely held news that was made public today. Mike, welcome.
Kathleen, Vonnie, great to see you this afternoon. Great to be here.
So what's going on?
Well, it's not a step that we take lightly or without some trepidation. Imagine under local market brand names, we have successfully retailed almost 9 million vehicles. So the local brand strategy has worked for us. But we always had in mind that someday we would unify the company under one brand name, and we're ready to take that step. So, for instance, South Florida, we sell under the Maroney name, which has been in the marketplace for 58 years. Cars have been retailed under the name Maroney. But we've made a significant investment. You know, the company was put together by our legendary founder, Wayne Huizenga, through acquisition. And I've been here now 13 years with the company. We've invested $3.7 billion with the mindset that someday we would take this step. And what we invested in was new expanded first-class facilities, acquisitions for different additional car lines for the marketplace that we're in, and most importantly, process and technology to create a unique and compelling customer experience.
So what does this mean? If you were doing so well, you just had record profits without taking this step. What is the strategy? What does this do for AutoNation, the company?
I think our vision of the future starts with today's customer. Today's customer is digitally empowered like never before. And they're having transformational experiences in other industries, from how they acquire books to how they travel. They certainly do not want to go back a decade or two when it comes time to acquire a car or truck. And we've decided to embrace this consumer and so have created these very friendly customer processes with very defined attributes of money back guarantee to smart choice pricing. And if you really look at the digital world and the tremendous bet and investment we're making in that, having one brand name really moves you to the top of the list. And so to put all our marketing dollars from coast to coast behind one brand that really stands for something, we feel will result in us having the position for the markets that we're in. If you live and work in our market, you can't make an intelligent decision about buying a car or truck without considering us. And
Mike,
that's really compelling
the company,
in the digital
I know you
world.
Didn't start the company, but when the company got started originally, why was this not a step that was taken at the beginning? You were buying a bunch of, you know, I guess, franchises, dealerships, and would it not have been the obvious thing to do to brand them as AutoNation?
So it was certainly discussed 13 years ago when I joined the company, and it came down to a very simple equation. We could brand the company then and overpromise and underdeliver, because the company was put together through acquisition with all these Wild West entrepreneurs who were told, just keep doing your own thing. So there was no common brand promise to make. So yeah, we could all have the same name, but everybody would have been doing different things. Mm-hmm. So we said, no, we'll take the longer route and we'll build a great company that does have a brand promise, and then we'll name the baby when we can deliver on the brand promise. So it's a longer, harder road, but we certainly, if you look at the local market brand strategy as a bridge strategy, was, as Kathleen says, was very effective and it worked for us. And you got to give us this. At our pinnacle of success, we still are ambitious We're not conservative. We're taking the risk of leaving behind brand names that have been in the marketplace for over 50 years because we're convinced that we're defining a unique dominant position going forward. But to answer your question, why not do it 13 years ago? Because we would have overpromised and underdelivered, and I refuse to do that.
So what kind of growth, extra growth, additional growth you must have in your planning and your goals and your projections, some range, something that you see yourself hitting over the next few years?
Yes. Unfortunately, you're not going to get that answer out from me.
Because
I'll tell you why. We don't even give guidance. Now, you know me, Kathleen. I call them as I see them. I got a point of view where the economy is, a point of view where the auto industry is, and I'm very clear on that. But when it comes to specific guidance for AutoNation, I'm thinking in multiple-year blocks, and I do not want to be pinned down or painted into a corner with specific guidance that then I always have to update or tweak or become a slave to. We take a very different view of the marketplace. What I will tell you is I am convinced that we're building a dominant position in the marketplace. I am convinced that we have an understanding of the American consumer, where they're going to be, and we are going to be there with the biggest position, and that we will prevail. That
but
I'm convinced of.
Do you think the idea that you don't give guidance, do you think that hurts the stock?
I could care less. If it does, it does. So here was my – so you would say, okay, Mike, you took 13 years on this journey, right? Boy, that's a long time. So what else did you do in the 13 years? Well, the way I looked at it was, you know, during these 13 years, I'm in a cyclical business. There's going to be good times. There's going to be bad times. As long as I can take advantage of the bad times, so what that it takes 13 years? By that, I mean when the stock was out of favor – we bought it in heavily because we knew where we were ultimately going. So we invested not only $3.7 billion in the core business, we also repurchased $7 billion worth of stock at an average price of $17 a share for a stock that's now trading at $47. So we, on this journey, not only were we successful in running the business, but we were successful in creating a lot of shareholder value.
Well, and shareholders looking, giving you some thumbs up today that stock's trading at $47.85. It's up three points. So looks like you're, again, getting the thumbs up.
20% year to date.
Yeah, so my point is if you take a long view, you can still create a lot of shareholder value. And whatever penalty you pay for not giving guidance, you just take.
Let's get right back to Mike Jackson, CEO of AutoNation. AutoNation reporting all-time record quarter and all-time record full-year results. Also branding domestic and import stores from coast to coast under the AutoNation name. Again, I think it's fascinating that you had to deal with a lot of different players in your company, in the industry. Because you're this is huge. You've got dealerships across the country. What, 210?
It's 210 franchises that are being rebranded. About 82% of our unit volume are premium luxury. Primarily, our German business had its own branding strategy, like Mercedes-Benz of Fort Lauderdale. We leave that untouched. They were never under the local market brand names.
So you had to, there were a lot of many steps. This isn't only changing the signs on the stores, right? There were a lot of steps you went through. Tell us what they were, and you managed to keep it very close to the vest. Nobody knew about this.
Well, of course, I've already mentioned an investment strategy of $3.7 billion in our core organic business, and then when we decided to make the big investment in digital, we said we're at a tipping point and we should take this step now. And then we had to open, of course, discussions with all the manufacturers, our partners, because we need their affirmative approval to do this. And we had been in discussions with them before that it was an idea. They had said, well, if we were to ever give permission for somebody to do this from coast to coast, that company would have to have met the very highest standards across the country from coast to coast, which I understand and I respect, and I'm very happy to say that we met or exceeded all of those standards, and we got their strong approval. They agree with us on the assessment of where the customer is and where they're going. They support our strategy to embrace this empowered customer, and since we met and exceeded all of their standards, they gave us their approval. Working that through the system took quite some time, as you could imagine. Now, what's very interesting, we then said, well, will we be able to do this in one day, or is it going to have to be a rollout? And so it's interesting what the critical path turned out to be as far as the timeline, and that is the local government approval for licensing and sign changes. So a typical dealership has 20 individual licenses from 20 different government agencies, all of which had different approval processes that had to be changed. And getting signs changed is – I needed another whole army of lawyers and to take care of. So we said, okay, we start in Florida and roll across the country. But I'm very proud. You know, we had a company leadership meeting in Dallas, Texas, about a week ago, the top 600 executives of the company. We told them that this is what we were going to do. And the outbreak of enthusiasm and emotion was very rewarding to see, because there's tremendous pride in the company of what we have done over the past decade and the experience that we provide our customers. And they are so proud that we are unfurling this common flag across the enterprise.
Well, just give us a little bit of the history, because the very, very beginning of the background here is that car makers are not allowed to sell their own branded cars. It has to be through franchises, right? That's U.S. rules. And so therefore, there sprung up a bunch of franchises around the country that were sort of almost in partnership with the car makers in some ways. So then...
Yes, and if you look at the history, I think first the entrepreneurial automotive franchise system has worked very well for the manufacturer and the consumer, and it's been a profitable business for the entrepreneur. There's never been an entity of the size and scale of AutoNation, and I must say, from the manufacturers, this was certainly disorienting as we came into play. However, I don't think it served the industry well in the following sense. The voice of the customer was lost, because the manufacturer was king and queen, and you had all these small mom and pop, I don't mean that in a derogatory way, that were dominated by the manufacturers. And when the mom and pops would say, this is not what people want, the manufacturer would say, well, this is what we're making. Figure out a way to make it go away. So when AutoNation came along and you looked at the crisis years of 05, 06, and 07, just as a for instance, we stood up and said, listen, the marketplace is in turmoil. It's going to turn down, and you're not producing what people want to buy. And by the way, we are going to stop buying, and we have a big position, and it's going to make a difference to you that we stop buying. And that was quite a moment and quite a moment of tension. But I think we're past all that now, and the industry is in very good shape. And I've never today seen a better alignment between what's being produced and what people want to buy. If I go back to the crisis years, imagine there was $100 billion of finished merchandise in the U.S. between the consumer and the factory that had to be liquidated before you could react to the consumer. Today, we're running the industry on $40 billion worth of inventory. So the closer you can get to the customer and the closer you can align production to what the customer wants, the happier everybody is and the more profitable everybody is, because you don't have to do these extreme discounting. And look at the results of Ford and GM and Chrysler and what a difference it's made. So I think we've played a very positive role in the evolution of the automobile retail business.
Given, as you mentioned, the size of your position in these car makers' inventory, how much sweeter of a deal do you guys get as opposed to the next door mom and pop franchise?
Here's the deal. We pay the same as mom and pop, in principle, you know, but the other side of the coin is you have a franchise, you have a protected territory. So the barriers to entry are very high. So I don't get the scale on the actual purchasing power of the product, but I do have protected territories and everybody else has protective territories. So then you say, well, what is the scale advantage of AutoNation? And I think you now see where we can build these dominant brands within markets that we can take the position, whatever you want, we have it. And we offer you a very customer-friendly experience in both how it's serviced and cared for. And we have the size and scale to take on big projects in digital and technology that last 7 years and are tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars to invest in. No mom and pop
can
do that.
Okay, but a lot of these dealerships, particularly in the luxury area, and you're a very predominant Mercedes-Benz dealer, and you're a very predominant Mercedes-Benz lover. You're ahead of Mercedes-Benz North America, and you've owned them for years. So this is really something you're connected to. So you know a lot of these dealerships are wealthy. They're doing well. Then they may be regional, but they're not really mom and pop anymore. Is there going to be a competitive response from the industry as somebody say, hey, look what Mike Jackson's doing over there, AutoNation. I'm going to call up some people here and there and mount a little competition here.
So I think, you know, when we talk the span of 100 years, you know, it started as mom and pop. And fully, there are big entrepreneurial enterprises today, both in the volume business and in the premium luggage, that are very sophisticated businesses, and they have their place in the marketplace. And the publicly traded groups altogether have only consolidated 10% of the business. So the dominant player is still the independent entrepreneur, and I'm not saying that's obsolete at all. And they're big added value parts of the fabric of their communities. What I am saying for the markets that we're in, and we cover about 50% of the geography where the American consumer buys cars, AutoNation's going to have a unique position. And I don't see who's going to match us.
Why are the Japanese automakers still dominating when it comes to, say, the midsize at least?
Well, I would not describe it that way. Mm-hmm. I would say the following, Connie. If I take the last 30 years, there was a strategic shift of share from the domestic manufacturers to the Asians of a point or two per year. And depending where you want to start counting, the domestics went from 75% of the marketplace to 45% of the marketplace. In my view, the renaissance of the domestics is real. It's here to stay. They have extraordinary new products, and the strategic shift of share has stopped. And share is going to stabilize approximately with the domestics in the mid-40s, the Asians in the mid-40s, and the Europeans taking the balance. The domestics have tremendous strength in trucks through the Midwest, down into Texas. They continue to innovate and invest in trucks. And as much as the Asians have strived, the domestics have a dominant position. Now, on the coastline with cars, no question the Asians have a strong position. But there's a lot of money in trucks. So I see a certain parity today. I don't think you're going to see the dramatic shifts in share. You see much more rational behavior. You don't see the extreme crazy incentives. I'm very happy about the state of the industry.
Well, I do have to ask you then, would you see yourself ever shifting from a Mercedes-Benz to, say, for example, the new Chevrolet Stingray?
First, I build a portfolio at AutoNation that says follows. We are one-third domestics. My view is there will always be a Ford, there will always be a Chevy. We are one-third Asian, and we're one-third premium luxury, primarily the Germans. I have owned or owned every car, every brand. I must admit a common thread is I started as an apprentice mechanic on Mercedes-Benz and ended up being CEO of Mercedes-Benz. Free America, there's a certain affinity there. But I also at the moment own a BMW, a Porsche, Nissan, a Toyota, and a few more.
See, he you know, guys like Mike Jackson, they change their cars like they change their clothes.
Yes,
I
love cars and trucks.
Well, Mike Jackson, we love you having you on the show, especially in studio. Thanks so much and congratulations. It'll be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Thank you. Joy being here with you guys, always.
Mike Jackson, CEO of AutoNation, an important announcement today.
You can listen to the Hayes Advantage weekdays at 12:30 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013, Bloomberg LP.